It's whiteout conditions.
Where are you?
What? Wow!
God
damn it.
We're never going to get this podcast rolling.
Comics and stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard.
And at how the old end, are you?
None of your business. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
You're 54, aren't you?
I'm not saying.
Wait, it is because you were born the same year I was, and I just celebrated my birthday. I had my birthday, didn't cry, although I wanted to. Yay!
Now, you see, here's the difference between you and me.
Oh, you mean other than the eyes, and I have a bionic hip, and you have long hair, and I have no hair, and you collect everything and keep, and I collect everything and sell it?
When just it's my birthday on show recording day, we record. When it's your birthday, oh no, I got a better offer. I had a better offer on Monday, too. And a better offer on Wednesday. And a better offer on Friday.
You don't even know what day my birthday was on.
Wednesday.
It was, and I did have a better offer.
I see.
You've heard me rant on and on and on about this, the local guy, Jason Matthews, and his show, The Jason Show. Well, my wife and I, at great risk to life and limb, because as Corey and I will probably attest to, this week in Minnesota, it has kind of sucked weather-wise. Not only in terms of temperatures, you know, because we survived the polar vortex, high five, and then we got dumped on snow. We've been pretty mild this year, didn't have any problems with temperature till the polar vortex. Now we've got snow. We've got
we have ice under the snow.
Yeah, and I'll talk a little more on freaking, but I mean, Monday, my family took me out for pizza because they couldn't get together on Wednesday because they had better offers. So I said, okay, free pizza, free. We paid for it, but whatever.
You got a free ice cream cone.
We did, because we went back to the place with the infamous Italian fries. And
we don't talk about that.
Oh, we will, because they're delicious.
Oh, we talk about the fries, but we don't talk about why they're infamous.
No, fuck that. They're good. So Tuesday, we had two distinct waves of snow. The first one Tuesday came through, and I believe it hit at rush hour, didn't it? Because I was off Tuesday, so I didn't.
Oh, yeah, that was a fun drive home, man.
Oh, my God. And that was the first time Corey and I thought, okay, let's record on Tuesday. And we didn't record on Tuesday.
I got home after 7:30. I leave work at 5.
Yeah.
I live 17 miles from my job.
Yeah, it was ugly. I mean, I went out. I the only thing I had was physical therapy. I went out and I had some money from the eBays, and I was feeling randy. It was my birthday, and I thought, you know what? I'm going out, and oh no, I'm going home. I'm not going out in this shit. And I got four-wheel drive. And then the second band hit. It was Wednesday night, wasn't it?
I don't know. They've all blended together.
Because what happened was, and we'll get to the Jason show. When Chris and I went to the Jason show, we went from our house over to your side of town in Eden Prairie because of the Fox 9 studios in Eden Prairie. Matter of fact, right on Flying Cloud Drive. And it took us, so you sign up, the tickets are free, and while we were at pizza, and we went to Mama's Pizza on the east side of St. Paul. Awesome place to go. Give him a little yell.
Ah!
Basically, I asked Chris, I said, should we go? And she's like, well, yeah, I'll go. So you sign up for 3 dates. And I said, February 6th, February 6th, February 6th. I just want to go. And one of the things is, you know, I want to go. And they give out these things, the Jason Show mugs, which are highly coveted. Well, they're cool. Yeah. But they don't give them out all the time. And so I'm thinking, okay, I want to go. It's going to be my birthday. Maybe I'll press a few strings. Hey, can I get one for my birthday? Blah, blah, blah. Well, we drove. The only thing that saved us is the fact that when it gets really bad up here in Minnesota and it's snowing, and it wasn't so much that it was snowing on Wednesday, but it was snowing from the previous Tuesday, the one that Corey got caught in. And we were basically just driving maybe 20 miles an hour. And part of the thing they tell you, you know, here's when you get to show, get here promptly at 9:15, blah, 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 blah. And it's like 8:30. We're barely past the airport. It's the sign on the thing saying 30 minutes ago. And I told Chris, should we just bail? And she's like, no, go for it. Because she knew I was really hyped to do it. And if I didn't go, I'd probably just be a bitch the rest of the day. That's just the way I am. She knows me so well. So we got to, I just basically parked into the right lane. I'm sorry, the left lane of the freeway. I'm not going to, you know, come down until I get closer to Flying Cloud Drive in Eden Prairie. And just, you know, I was behind trucks and whatever. And we just kept going. Got to about, I think, a little bit past Highway 100, where the highway opens up. And I'm like, okay, well, let's start slowly moving ourselves down into, holy shit, I'm going sideways. Chris slapped the four-wheel on. And she did. And I wasn't, don't accelerate, don't brake, just let the car do what it's going to do. If you're going to spin out, you're going to spin out. Well, we didn't. Slowed down, got into the right lane, and finally exited off and got to the studio. And when we got there was only two people there. And we came in, we're like, boy, you know, he can fit like 30 people in the audience, maybe 50 if they move the chairs around. And we're like, I guess it's going to be the four of us. Well, two more people came. And then three more people came, but they were actually featured guests. And I'll talk about that later. But two of them,
they were allowed to be late.
Well, one of them went in to the green room because she was actually going to be on air. So they had to get her wired for the mic. And that the other two were there. And they were talking about how they watched a car in front of them spin out on the same part of the road that Chris and I did our little sideways weave. And if they hadn't have gone, if the car hadn't have spun right, if it had spun left, they would have wiped these guys out. And I said, oh my God, where was that? Oh, just right past Highway 100. Oh geez, we were there minutes ahead. Just, oh, it's always for the grace of God, go you, because I'll talk about this later when I talk about it, we get the freaking, because I had similar things like that. And of course, to finish the whole podcasting story is Wednesday night into Thursday morning. And throughout Thursday, that's when the next snow ban came. And I think we ended up with I think about 6 to 8 inches on my side of town. How about you down in Chaska area?
I don't know how many inches or any of that. I just know that when I shoveled it, the snow was exceedingly light.
Yeah.
Which was wonderful because I didn't even raise a sweat shoveling out the driveway. The problem was before it snowed, it rained.
And this is all the way back
Monday. Tuesday. Because I woke up at the group home and went out and the car... You know, sometimes you got a little bit of ice on the car. No, this was about, I would say, like an eighth of an inch thick ice on the car. So it actually took about 20 minutes for the windows to heat up enough that I could scrape them. But for me, it was the drive into work has just been terrible the last few days. So why we're here.
We missed on Thursday. And I after coming home from work, and I'm coming from the airport to St. Paul. All I got to do is get to St. Paul and I can four-wheel side streets. I think I texted you and said, you know, I don't think we're going to do it tonight. So, and then Friday was kind of a similar thing, but, you know, it's a little slippery, but if you're careful. So here we are. We're recording.
What?
Let's review some comic books.
Well, first, I want to ask you something, Joe.
What? Oh, is this a Joe no?
No, this is...
I got to get my thinking grenades. Oh, no, it's okay. Put my thinking grenades down carefully.
How many seasons of Scooby-Doo have there been?
I thought there was only two of the original. After that, there were the Scooby-Doo Mysteries. There was the Scrappy-Doo Horror Show. There was one where just Shaggy, and I guess it was supposed to be Daphne running around, although they might have had a different voice actor because I didn't think it was Daphne. What was the hour show where they like had Batman and Robin or Laurel and Hardy?
That was Scooby-Doo, Where Are You?
Yeah.
But they are all under the umbrella, according to Hanna-Barbera, of Scooby-Doo. There have been 20 seasons of Scooby-Doo, Joe.
Oh.
300.
Creep mentioned that because he used to write Scooby-Doo, and he said that there's an actual timeline where everything falls.
Yep.
And, you know, you can write the stories accordingly. And, of course, sometimes they're like, no, we just want to deal with these, this, with that. Which does mean that the incredible crossover with not only Johnny Bravo, but with John Cena is canon. At least
they're all canon.
Yep.
But they have had 392 episodes. Joe, ask me why that is important.
Well, it doesn't tie into Mortal Kombat having Shaggy as a non-fighter?
No.
Oh, okay. Hang on a second. Corey, why is that? I got to do it. Corey, why is it? Why is it? Corey, why is that important?
Because we just passed them.
Ooh!
393 episodes. We now
I'll drink to that.
We now have more episodes than The Voice with 388. My Three Sons had 378 episodes.
We're aiming for you, Gunsmoke.
Let's see. NCIS has 362 episodes. We left them in the dust ages ago.
Ages ago.
Best Selling Secrets, a sitcom in Hong Kong, 364 episodes. We left them behind. We have more episodes than Degrassi, The Next Generation, which had 385. The Beachcombers, which was another Canadian show, with 387. We are coming up on ECW Hardcore TV, which had 397 episodes.
ECW.
You do realize that when we beat ECW, somebody's got to go through a table.
That's going to have to be you, because I still have to get another hip replaced.
Oh, what a coward.
I could not get doctor clearance to allow myself to go through a table.
We will also be passing The Joy of Painting soon, which had 402 episodes.
Of course, the granddaddy is Gunsmoke. How many episodes did they have?
Let me take a look.
And while you're doing that, I'll see. I'm going to fire up the old...
I believe it was... well, they were, what, 20 seasons as well? Because Law and Order was also 20 seasons. So there were 480 episodes. So we got a ways to go to beat them, but we will. We will.
But the other thing, too,
the only shows we won't beat are soap operas, because, you know, they did one every day. No way.
The other thing, though, is that if you notice, the Simpsons are scared because they just renewed themselves for two more seasons.
Yes. Because
they know we're going to overcome them.
We're gunning for them.
We are.
And we do more episodes per year than they do, so we will eventually catch up and beat them.
Yes, we will.
I will do the math for next week.
Well,
I know I've told you there will be no math. I also want to bring back one of our favorite segments that we have not had in a while.
Uh-oh.
Joe, it's time for American food.
Oh, no.
American food. Get away
Wait
from
me. No double down near my TV.
We started this show with the double down years and years ago. Kentucky Fried Chicken is back, baby.
They're back.
Kentucky Fried Chicken is now testing a Cheetos-filled sandwich with a custom Cheeto sauce. I don't even want to know what a Cheetos sauce would be. I know what a cheese sauce would be.
Cheetos? That's the. But I don't know how you would sauce Cheetos. Maybe puree?
I know, that's what.
Pressure cooker?
But it's a chicken sandwich stuffed with Cheetos. Now, I thought it was kind of weird when they started stuffing Fritos into the Taco Bell burritos. But then again, if you go to Taco Bell, you're stoned. So yeah, that's fine. But Kentucky Fried Chicken, they're now shoving Cheetos in a sandwich. Now, when I was in high school, my friend Brett, who passed away, almost 10 years ago. He used to take his fries and put them on his quarter pounder with cheese. That's how he would eat his fries. But there you go.
Well, let me ask you this, Corey. I like this segment. I mean, we don't hit it too often. Should we actually maybe try these on the air?
We can try some of them. Now that
There's no way in heck I would ever do the double down, because, you know, it would be an instant heart attack for me, and you don't eat the meats. But
I don't even look at Arby's when I drive by.
I think we should work hard to try to get these, and maybe we'll try them here on the shows.
Well, there's another one you sent me that I want to try immediately, and what? I actually have been looking for it since you sent it to me.
And it is?
Chocolate peanut butter milk. Hit store shelves Thursday. That would be like drinking a Reese's peanut butter cup.
I will try that if I can find it. So basically what the deal is, if you find it, text me and I'll stop looking. And if I find it, I'll do the same thing to you, and we'll figure a way to share part. We will try this so you, the viewing audience, don't have to.
Now, one thing we won't do.
It's
stealing. It's gimmick infringement, because over on WrestleCrap Radio, they tried the Doritos and the chips and the snacks and things like that. No. That's not American enough.
No. I'm still looking for the Peanuts beer.
Yep. You know, for the Peanuts beer. It was Planters.
Planters Peanuts beer.
Planters Peanuts beer.
I've not found it.
My dad used to do this, and I hear it is a thing, but I don't see anybody here in Minnesota do it. Did you ever hear of people putting peanuts in their beer?
I've seen people put salt in their beer, but never peanuts.
Yep, I've seen that too, but peanuts. I've seen people put peanuts in their beer. It's a Southern thing, I guess.
Oh, that's where they drink soda instead of pop?
I drink soda instead of pop. Because I had someone in my life who, almost a year and a half, anytime I would say pop, she would just yell at me and go, it's pop? What are you, five? Although my grandfather used to call it sody pop, which I always liked. And last thing that I want to point out, since I finally got a chance to say something, I have to behave on Facebook now.
Why?
My grandmother is on Facebook now.
Hi, Grandma. Is it Grandma Strode?
Nope, Grandma Orwig. Grandma Strode passed away just a few months short of turning 100.
Wow. So basically, that's
you people are putting up with me for a long goddamn time.
I will probably check out by the time I'm 70, but you're going to have Corey for a long, long time.
And by then, maybe I will have caught up on everything on the DVR.
Do you hear that, Corey?
No, I don't. What is that?
It is nothing. Mark Chilaro, John Cunningham, Bill Morrison, their social media feeds are dead.
Yes.
Their LinkedIn profiles haven't even, Facebook says it haven't even, and where's Dan Didio?
Dan Didio? I do know that
he's not at the DC offices, I know that.
I know that Bill Morrison actually, we don't know if he was let go or quit, but he is no longer a VP at DC or the editor of MAD, which is a shame, because I actually picked up MAD when the new number one hit, and I've, you know, it's not aimed at me, but I think there's funny stuff in it, and I like it. There's more comic book type stuff in it. I like the 20 stupid things from last year. I thought that was very well done.
I did hear that, and this is through the comic gossip Rich Johnson at bleedingcool.com. He's saying that Dan, how do you say his name?
Didio.
He has been crisscrossing coasts, talking to valued comic creators, comic stores, and Diamond representatives face to face to assure them of DC stability going forward and to put an end to scurrilous gossip. Well, too late, because we picked it up, and by God, there's something I love is a good gossip.
I've talked in the past, DC was talking about moving into other markets and moving into the young adult market, which I hope they don't kill. I really hope they don't kill, because I see the superhero girls at Target, and it's selling as well as the other, you know, the books that are there. You know, if you're in Target and you don't sell, they don't leave you there very long.
Yeah.
They move you to the clearance rack pretty goddamn quick. But I know that DC has been saying to the people who work at DC and in their press releases about all the change that's going on is that they're going to focus on comic shops and comic storytelling. And
I, you know, and
we've way to double down, guys.
I don't know if, you know, I don't see them wanting to kill the golden goose, because really the direct market's a golden goose for them. It's cash in the hand, because whatever they get, they will never return. And I don't know what the deal with Walmart is. So far, it looks like it's going great, because I don't see – I haven't heard of comics being returned. I also thought it was interesting. I've started to see those packs that you were talking about, like Marvel Comics 3-packs yeah. of comics that just came out last month. So I don't know if that's from Diamond or from Marvel or from where that's coming from. But, you know, they're not going to sit around and wait for fanboys like us to pick up the books. And, you know, I got to give you and me some kudos here, because if there's one thing you and I do, we do love talking about comics, at least ones we love. We don't yes. spend a lot of time poo-pooing things. I might, occasionally it might catch our eye, but for the most part, we like to be positive, because if I'm going to plunk my hard cash down on something, I want to enjoy it, and I'll talk about it. I don't want you. Hey, would somebody go out and buy me Omicron Transformers versus GoBots number 5? I want to talk about it, but I just don't want to buy it. Speaking of which. Is this a good segue to reviews?
Sure.
Because this is something, too, that for a while Corey and I were on top of, and it just kind of went by the wayside as different things happened. What we're talking about now are reviews. These are things that, for the most part, Corey and I have actually bought. So we're not getting any feedback. We're not promoting it. And I think when we talk about our reviews, we'll probably be more positive on that versus like a preview, which is something somebody sent us to say, hey, would you look at this and talk about it? And we are all for that. So if you are a creator and you have something coming up, you want us to preview on this show? Well, we'll drop our contact information a little bit later. And we are more than willing to look at it with a critical eye. And of course, we always ask the three things: buy, borrow, or ignore. So, and we'll let you know. And we won't say things like we think there's too many lines.
No.
I mean, I lived through cross-hatching in the 90s. You just can't have enough lines.
Oh, unless you're Vince Colletta.
There's my
X-Force. Then you erase all the lines.
There's my X-Force omnibus that I haven't opened yet. Oh, well. Anyways.
Yeah. I would have thought you'd be reading that all the whole time you were out.
The only one I could read is the crossover where Rob and Todd did their crossover between with Spider-Man X-Force, because that was kind of a fun little romp. I like romp. So do you want to start or should I?
Why don't you go ahead and start?
All right. You know, and Corey, to tell you the truth, we are influential in ways that we don't even know, mainly because no one wants to give us any credit for it. Do you remember?
They don't even put together our Wikipedia page.
No, nope.
Bastards.
Do you remember when I was suggesting way back in 2016, you know, the Monkees had just come out with a new album. They were pushing it on the Amazons and everything, and actually shot up the charts pretty well. Original songs, They actually found one that Davy Jones had sung that was never released. And it was just, and I had made the comment, you know what, why isn't someone going back and grabbing the old Dell comic books and republishing them as like a collection to tie into all this? Why didn't they do that when Yellow Submarine graphic novel came out from Titan last year? Well, somebody at the Schultz Museum had to have been listening, because through Kaboom, which is, I guess, the kid section of boomstudios.com, they came out with exactly the type of archive I'm talking about. They came out with the Peanuts Dell Archives, which has every classic Dell Peanuts comic from the 50s and 60s all together. And the big thing, and you and I talked about it in the past, is that it's not all done by Schultz. Matter of fact, for the most part, he kind of checked out after the first couple issues. I think he might have done some covers, maybe a few original strips. They do talk about it. And these were in Weird Comics, too. I mean, they weren't necessarily in their own Peanuts book, although Dell eventually did publish a Peanuts book. That was published by Dell. They first appeared in, like, Nancy 146, done by Charles Schultz himself in 1957. Then they went up Nancy 147, another one, but they don't know who did it, if it was Schultz or Jim Sassoville. And this just reprints everything. These stories are wonderful. They're longer than the strips, obviously, because it's comic book format, printed in color. And they pretty much got the feel for the Peanuts. This is just a fantastic collection, and I mean, retail $24.99. Why other people aren't doing this with Dell archive stuff. And I got to look in the beginning, because I remember I've talked to you about who owns this stuff. And this is all owned copyright Peanuts Worldwide, which I think is the company that was formed after Charles Schultz passed away. Or maybe it was formed during it. I don't know. So for the case of the Monkey Comics, like I said, would have been a wonderful reprint to do. I believe whoever owns Screen Gems, if you remember at the end of the show, this is a Screen Gem production or whoever. And you research to see who owns it. Somebody owns the rights to these things. Otherwise, they'd be up on the interwebs as freebie reprints. So anyways, if you like Peanuts, if you like history, because again, there's a little historical blurb in the beginning that talks about comics, or you just want to see I don't know. It's a fun little done in one album. Check it out. Peanuts Dell Archive from Kaboom.
I am holding in my hand the first of a series of trade paperbacks Marvel's putting out. Decades. Marvel in the 40s. And it is Human Torch versus the Submariner. This is a reprint pretty much of all of the fights between the Human Torch and the Submariner from the 40s. You know, they had announced this, and I said that I was interested in it because I like that Human Torch Submariner. But each of these trade paperbacks is going to be a theme, and the one from the 40s is the Human Torch versus the Submariner. So it reprints. Whip this out.
Whoa!
Marvel Mystery Comics number 7, which is the prelude to the first fight. Marvel Mystery Comics number 9. Human Torch Comics number 3, which is the huge fight that everybody thinks about. This is the one where they said, all right, we're going to have the Human Torch and the Submariner fight for the entire issue. It is a 60-page story. And the way it was worked in the office or put together a hotel, got together in a hotel room. So it's got that story where they just kind of jammed. All of these artists and writers got together, and they were battling a deadline, so they actually rented a hotel room for a week, is the legend, and batted out this 60-page story. It has fights afterward. It also reprints Marvel Mystery Comics number 8, Marvel Mystery Comics number 10, Human Torch Comics number 58, and Human Torch Comics number 10. So there's a whole lot of Submariner beating the crap out of the Human Torch and vice versa. That's all this book is. And if you want a good sample of what Marvel, you know, what Timely Comics were like, go pick up this book. These are their most famous stories, but it's also the stories that they translate the best because they're just plain old superhero stories. And over at DC, you didn't get, oh, here's 60 pages of Batman and Superman beating the shit out of each other. But Marvel, the heroes fought all the time. So when the heroes came back in the 60s, you know, the joke was, first time heroes meet, they have to fight. This is where that started. Joe, what's next on your list?
Have you ever heard of Ko-Fi.com?
No.
I didn't either. Apparently what it is, it's a place where creators can go and set up things and get paid by people who like your work. There's over like 300,000 creators funding their passions with a free Ko-Fi page. That's Ko-Fi.com. I was introduced to a young lady who goes under the lmnop.art. That's lmnop.art. And she basically said she's a self-employed artist, illustrator, publisher. She works in Photoshop, watercolor. And she was offering if you bought what they call cups, which if you look, go to the website, Ko-Fi, they have little cups with hearts on them. And so you purchase a cup, in this case, five cups, which is $15. And then she'll send you a copy of her ebook, Fight Like a Girl. And then she sends it to the address you are interested in. So I was feeling, I don't know, feeling generous. I love supporting local artists. I haven't been to a con in a long time. I got a lot of buying built up. So I sent her 15 bucks. She sent me a copy of her artwork called Fight Like a Girl. It's Walking in the Shoes of History, an illustrated journal. And it covers her going to the I'm trying to get that page. It's pretty good. I mean, you're talking, it's about 82 pages. So it's a lot of reading. And she goes, I'm just going to read it off. It's her backstory. She's talking about late 2016 after the elections. I'm going to read this just as she wrote it. My friend Nev and I hit me up with an invite. Would I like to join her in a road trip to the newly announced Women's March on Washington, D.C.? My first impulse was to say no. Didn't have the money, don't like the crowds or politics yet. It just felt important. Obviously, not being a woman, not being able to travel. I did not go to the Women's March, but I do know my daughters. My sister did. And I just thought it was kind of interesting just looking at this experience through her eyes. And she does little sketches of what she sees. She talks about notes from her diary. It goes through the entire process, how she was feeling, the sights she saw, the people she ran into, people holding up signs. Our rights are not up for grabs. Neither are we. Just a fascinating book. For me, it tugged me, not only because, you know, well, I married a girl and I have two girls. It was an interesting, I like the political aspect of it. It was a historical event. It piqued my curiosity. And for me, it was a $15 well spent. It was a fabulous ebook. I don't want to say too much more about it because, you know, you can go pick up your own copy of Fight Like a Girl. And I will, you go to, and I'll give you the website. It's Ko-Fi.com, and I don't know how you pronounce this, lmnopart, but it's ko-fi.com/lmnopart. That'll bring you right to her website. You can also go facebook.com, the same thing, lmnopart, and the link, that's where I found it. The link will bring you right to the Ko-Fi site. There, she has a little YouTube preview of it, and you can decide there if you really want to drop $15. And for me, to support a local creator is a no-brainer. You know, because as you know, we will see plenty of local creators when the MSP SpringCon rolls around 2019, and it's on May 18th and 19th, 2019. See, I got screwed up by the 19th. And if you're interested in going, dealer apps are up now. Creator apps are up now. Everything's done online. You'll get confirmations almost immediately. They also have a few of the guests up. Our good buddy Angel Medina is already featured. All that fun information, mcbacomiccons.com. So not only can you know support a local creator online like we just talked about, but that con is probably the best place to go to get in touch with local creators and check out some of the other fun things besides Superman and Batman beating up each other or whatever. Corey, what you got up next?
I am holding in my hand the latest issue of the Jack Kirby Collector. It's issue 75, but it is not a magazine. It is a trade paperback, and it is called Lee and Kirby, Stuff Said, the Complete Genesis of the Marvel Universe from the Creator's Own Words. What it is, they have taken the interviews with Stan Lee and Jack Kirby about the creation of Marvel and put them in a timeline. So this is what they were saying in 1950. You know, this is what they were saying in the 50s. This is what they were saying in the 60s. This is what they were saying in the 70s. It takes their interviews and interviews with other people about the creation of Marvel and creates a timeline, not just of what happened, but what they say happened. It's just a fascinating book. I'm only halfway through, and I just could not like it more. It has stuff from the letters pages. There are a few things where I look at it and go, I don't think that that means what you say it means. So I'm disagreeing with the editorial stuff from time to time. However, the fact that they've gathered together, first off, as a research project, it is amazing. They've got stuff here from New York Times articles, fanzine articles, interviews that were recorded for radio shows. I don't know how they were able to get all of this. And it shows, it also gets into when certain aspects got put into the stories. Because, Joe, you've heard the story Stan Lee told about how, you know, I was really unhappy working in the comic industry, and my wife said, I should do the kind of books that I want to write, since I'm unhappy and I'm probably wanting to leave anyway.
Sure.
Well, that kind of just started in 1971. Before that, Stan didn't talk about it. He talked about how, you know, we wanted to try superheroes again. So Jack and I batted around ideas. By 1971, he had slipped that into his story. And it shows the evolution of both of how, what they said at the time, what they said later, when certain aspects started jumping in. I'm at about 1972, which was during the kind of the worst part of Stan and Jack, because Jack was really pissy about Stan and did the Funky Flashman and House Roy story in Mr. Miracle, which was a not very thinly veiled shot at Stan and Roy Thomas. And how Stan, there are a few things in here that I didn't realize, mostly because, you know, when I'm reading the comics from the early 70s, I'm reading reprints. I didn't know that about a year after Kirby left, Stan actually put in the Fantastic Four letters page, hey, we're looking for ideas from you, fans.
What was the name of that?
It's called Stuff Said. Kirby and Lee, Stuff Said. It is Jack Kirby Collector, issue 75.
I'm going to yell out a big serendipity, baby, because I got that in my collection, too, for exactly the reasons you talk. I want to read about the history things. So I haven't read it yet, so it was fun to hear what you thought about it.
Like everything from Tomorrow's, it's excellent reading, professionally put together. It looks great. You know, you've got original art, you've got pencils, you've got photos, you've got You know, just a treasure trove of stuff. It's even got like typewritten pages that were probably scripts and things. So well worth the money if you want to know about the early days of Marvel. I recommend most everything from Tomorrow's. This one gets a high recommendation. Joe?
I'm actually going to do some comic books now. Because during the cold, bitter snap, I actually ended up getting my box day 2 days late, which is fine. I'd rather safe than not at all. And the only bummer was when it is like, oh, it's going to be delivered Wednesday. And all of a sudden, Wednesday, severe weather, and the tracking just disappeared. You know, and I was home Thursday because I couldn't get my car started. And I thought, oh, maybe it'll show up today. Nope. Showed up Friday when I got the car started. I'm at work. And, of course, I'm ultra paranoid because, you know, you always hear about people snagging packages off the front step. And I go, oh, yeah, here's my $300 worth of comics just sitting there for anybody to get. Oh, sorry, I'm getting upset. But I finally started reading some of these. And the weird thing is I haven't really read a lot of comics in 3 months ever since the whole hip thing. So I've got like a short box full of comics. And the first one I pulled out, I figured I'd just grab some number ones. And I guess this is LGY number 151. What the hell? Oh, legacy number. Guardians of the Galaxy number one. Starts out a new series. I guess they're putting the legacy numbers for all farts like me. But it is a number one. It does a pretty good job of bringing you up to speed because I haven't read Infinity, the last Infinity Wars, whatever going on when Gamora went bad and whatever. I did see her kill Thanos, so I knew he was dead. Sorry if that's a spoiler for you. If you think he's really dead, that's your hang up. And it starts out, it looks like what they're doing is getting back into the cosmic Marvel area because starts out with almost a who's who of cosmic people. I mean, and they're bringing in some of the new ones, like the Ghost Rider from the old Thanos series, the cosmic-powered Frank Castle. I think that's Dark Star. I see I can't tell if that looks like Warlock in the background. Beta Ray Bill, some of the original Guardians, Howard the Duck, Cosmos, Corsairs, and Star Fox is basically just gathering everybody together because of a final ominous note that Thanos left. And Thanos kind of implies that he is planted his consciousness into another mind in the galaxy, which will make him rise again. And so he got everybody together. And of course, they give the little twist that I love, which was kind of a kicker for me. Star Fox goes, you will notice the intentional lack of, quotation marks, Earth's mightiest heroes as well. I did this because how do you say they are not averse to uncleaned hands? So that got my attention. And then the following page, we catch up with who we consider the Guardians of the Galaxy, what they've been doing, and all sorts of shenanigans and shoo. This is the beginning. The first series is called The Final Gauntlet. Donny Cates is writing it. Jeff Shaw, the artist. And I think I'm on board for a while because this is a lot of fun. I mean, they're characters that are I know. And some of it, I don't know, like, well, what happened with this person? What happened with that person? I'm sure I'll get caught up, or if worse comes to worst, I'll just look for it on Wikipedia. But as a beginning of a start, or a continuing for you legacy numberings, this was a good issue. And the other thing Marvel is doing, which I like, is it starts out $4.99, a little, you know, $1 more, but they're filling it with story. So... Oh, and by the way, the last page, don't go to it. I'm not going to mention it, but that was also a, well, how should we say? You got me, you know? So that was my first comic. How about you, Corey? What you got next?
The Fantastic Four Wedding Special number one.
Ooh.
This came out before the big wedding in the Fantastic Four, so this was right before that. It is a special issue.
Good to know. So I read the special issue before I read the Fantastic Four Wedding.
Yes, because...
Because I haven't read either.
In the Fantastic Four Wedding special, you have Gail Simone and Laura Braga doing a story of Alicia's bachelorette party.
Ooh.
Dan Slott, Mark Buckingham, and Mark Farmer doing the story of Ben Grimm's bachelor party. And Fred Hembeck doing the story of... what the Puppet Master's up to.
Oh, fun.
It was fun. That was the thing about this. It was very fun. Gail Simone's story was just a blast. I enjoyed it. It was funny. It had all the stuff of a good superhero story. You know, there was a lot of characterization. There were a lot of superhero things. There was a fight scene. The characters were funny. The characters were likable. It reminded me a lot of when I like Marvel, when it's, you know what, these are just regular people who happen to have superpowers. The Dan Slott story, Father Figure, was excellent. It just shows why Dan Slott is so good at these classic characters. He understands the thing. He understands the relationships between all the characters. And then Fred Hembeck, he is somebody who we don't get enough work from. I know that he makes a lot of money, you know, doing sketch cards, selling them on eBay. But his storytelling style, while it's cartoony and goofy, this is a guy, he knows the Marvel Universe backward, forward, upside down, inside out, and sideways. And anytime he's doing a Marvel superhero story, you know, usually it's goofy, but it kind of shows off the fun part of an interconnected universe, rather than how, oh, okay, this story's got to tie in with 15 other things. It's more, you know what, I've read this stuff, here's the story. If you know the past, it's funnier, but it's fine on its own. The only thing that people will not be happy about, of course, is the fact that it's 34 pages for, I'm going to get the price here.
Was it $4.90 or $5.99?
I didn't have it on the digital.
Hang on. Give me a second. I got it. I actually alphabetized all my books, so I know where they're at. So hang on. What is it? Fantastic Four Special. $4.99.
Okay, $4.99 for 34 pages of story. So, you know, that's kind of what an annual would be. It was a nice little fun book that, you know, it's a one-shot. It's a tie-in. You don't need to read it, but if you do read it, it's going to make the wedding of Alicia and Ben Grimm seem much more interesting. Joe?
Shazam! I got me Shazam 1 and 2. And again, DC decided to bump up the first issue to $4.99, which is fine because they filled it with story. I'd be annoying if it was filled up with...
Crackers.
Well, maybe not that annoying, but again, they're going for an all ages audience. Now, I've got one real. I know the basic tenet of Captain Marvel / Shazam. They even do a little bit of fun in there where they're trying to figure out what to name themselves. And goes, I thought I'd name myself Captain Mar. No. We're going this way. You know. Now I don't know what happened, but for I know we were introduced to Shazam in Justice League, and I don't know what's happened between then and now. Either I haven't read something or I missed something, but there's a lot of things going on. For example, most of the characters, apparently there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, there's 6 Shazam characters. I don't know who they are. Some of them I recognize. I mean, Mary Marvel, because it's Mary. And there's Freddie Freeman, who's a bit more realistic. Apparently, they're all part of a foster family. I don't know how they all got the powers of Shazam. I mean, obviously, I know how Billy got it. And so I'm a little bit off on that. But as I read the story, I didn't really care. It was just a lot of fun. The main story ends on kind of a whoa. And the second little book is just kind of, it's let's see, Jeff Johns, Mayo San Nato, does a little story that ties into what's going on, and will probably have a payoff a little bit on farther down. And then, of course, issue two, which was I lucked out, I was able to get into, continues. And again, there's a little backstory that, I'll come back to that. Whatever is going on, you know, they're reintroducing the characters and the concepts that we all know if you've been following Captain Marvel / Shazam, reintroducing them for the new 52. And, you know, I've given a lot of grief on New 52, but this is actually, it's interesting reading. It's fun. I'm very curious as to where they're going. And there was a preview in the back. Okay, number two dropped to $3.99, which is fine. But there's a preview in the back for the Wonder Twins coming up, which is a preview. I guess it's a comic that I saw, and I kind of like, well, you know, again, I'm limited in my funds. I wasn't going to pick up. But after reading the preview, I'm thinking, you know, I might have to jump on board on this one. And again, DC, if you're going to be doing this, this is a good way to do it, because I could see the same type of feel I got from Shazam, you know, where the kids are out doing the superheroes. I got the same thing from the Wonder Twins. And I guess they're playing off the Wonder Twins that they were just, hey, you know what? They are aliens. They were just dropped on Earth and they have to go to school. And I'm kind of like, okay, that's interesting. You know, much more interesting than Super Friends. Sorry. But so for me, the first two issues of Shazam were a lot of fun. Again, there's some stuff I don't know. I don't understand how it went from just Billy being Captain Marvel or Shazam. Sorry, I guess we're getting rid of the Captain Marvel thing. Trademarks. And how the whole family, the Foster family, is now Shazam. And, of course, there's always the little bit that the foster parents have no idea their entire foster brood are a bunch of superheroes. Matter of fact, I don't even think the world knows they're superheroes yet. So there's a lot to play with, and I'm on board for the ride. So I enjoyed it. I recommend it. Next up for you, Mr. S.
I have read the first three issues of the new Green Lantern.
Ooh, I
Green
love
Lantern
it.
Is now being done by Grant Morrison and Liam Sharp.
Oh, say no more. You had me at Morrison.
Liam Sharp is an artist who I've kind of, he's someone I like, but it's not somebody I really go nuts for. But I'm really loving the art he's doing on this. I think part of it is because he's inking himself, that his art really stands out. But there's also, when he's doing the aliens, they feel alien. They feel weird. It reminded me a lot of the Kevin O'Neill stuff. Kevin O'Neill, who did some stuff for DC in the 80s and is mostly known now for League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, where he's the artist who he had a story rejected by the Comics Code. And DC said, well, what can we do to get it through the code? And they said, you just can't. We won't allow his art to be code approved because it's just too weird and disturbing. Which he wore as a badge of honor through the 80s and 90s. Morrison basically strips away a lot of the stuff that's been going on with Green Lantern. You don't have to have read any of the New 52 or Rebirth Green Lantern stuff, which is good because after Jeff Johns left, I lost a lot of interest in Green Lantern. It starts Hal Jordan is a kind of a slacker drifter. You know, just not really doing much of anything when he's not Green Lantern because, you know, whatever story came before, he wasn't allowed to be Green Lantern. Well, of course, because it's the first issue, he's back to being Green Lantern, and he's they treat it more like he's a cop. But because it's Grant Morrison, the stories are... Somebody said the stories are really strange. And when I read it, it's more, these stories really feel like Silver Age superhero stories for a modern time. And Joe, you've read some Silver Age DC. That stuff was really weird.
Yeah, it's a lot of it's hit or miss. Although they did do good with the gorillas.
Yeah. But these stories really feel like that. The third issue is probably one of the most fantastic one-issue stories I've read in a long, long time. aliens kidnap the Earth and put it up for sale. And an alien buys it, and this alien looks a lot like how we, how artists have perceived God. And I'm not going to tell you anything, but it's got a just a fantastic twist ending, which is, you know, something that Silver Age stories had as well. I am loving this book. And with this and the next book I'm going to be reviewing, DC is kind of drawing me back in, which is both good and important. Because, you know, both of us for a long time were like, oh, DC. Eh. But Grant Morrison on Green Lantern, I'm really liking it. It's exciting. It's fun. It's creative. And Liam Sharp's art just blows me off the page. He's able to do regular scenes of people, you know, just interacting with quiet moments, but also weird aliens in the middle of huge fight scenes. So Green Lantern, first three issues. I'm loving it. Joe?
Now, the next one I'm reviewing, I may have to revisit because I read it. I was kind of excited to read it, and I'm kind of Okay, work with me here, Corey. Afterlife with Archie. What'd you think of it?
I love that book.
Yep. I thought it was really good. Really good.
Really, really angry that it's been years since an issue came out.
Well, what about Chilling Adventures of Sabrina?
I thought it was okay. I wasn't as bowled over by it.
What about Jughead as a werewolf?
I'm going to be reading that. In trade
what about paper. What about Veronica as a Vampironica?
I'll be reading that as trade.
I'm kind of getting. That's kind of what I'm thinking because I picked up Blossoms 666 number one because I'm since Corey gave up Redheads, I guess I got to pick up the slack. And
good for you. Enjoy that.
Well, I'm married to one, so what am I going to do? So I thought, okay, I give it a try. And part of me, after I read it, was kind of like, is that what Archie's going to be doing? Is just let's see how many different ways we can make our characters into horror icons until one sticks. I mean, granted, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina is a Netflix series, which I have yet to watch. And they have been doing pretty good, I guess, with Riverdale, which a few people I know have watched it, and they're kind of like, no. And I haven't seen it, so I really can't comment intelligently on it. And I do plan to watch Chilling Adventures of Sabrina because, you know, she's one of my high school crushes. So with this one, I'm thinking I might have to do like you said, Corey. It's a mini series, I believe. And the first issue was interesting enough. It didn't leave me wanting more. It didn't leave me wanting less. It made me kind of like, why did I buy it? Maybe I should just.
Why did I do this?
I'm probably going to wait and review it when I get all the issues together. I forget what it is, 5-6 issues series. And maybe in the future, I'll just buy these as graphic novels. And I'm also kind of wondering if Archie's is losing it because, you know, is that really all there? Are they doing this because they, you know, hey, I got a great idea, or like, hey, you know what? Maybe we could get Netflix to make a series out of this, or, you know. So that being said, like I said, you know, the first issue, I'm in for the run. I want to see where it ends up. What I really want to see from DC is, you know, you got to take Dylan and just, dude, he's like your Doctor Who or the Archie universe. We saw it in Life with Archie, and you just kind of let it drop. He should be the guy that ties all these universes together and have some fun with it. There, I just gave you your $1 million idea. Look at Dell. They listen to us. DC's listening to us. That will probably be the next series I'll buy from Archie. Other than that, like I said, I'll probably just pick them up as graphic novels because I don't know. I'm just not the whole Archie as horror thing is. I don't know if they're trying to get lightning in a bottle since they until Riverdale's canceled, we're never going to see another Afterlife with Archie. So, and I, again, Corey, you haven't read it. When the graphic novel comes out, maybe we'll revisit this one. So. again, not disappointed, not yeah, you know, again, it kind of
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
I'm not even disappointed. I'm just like, you know, is that all that, you know, you did Archie 1941, which I you had me when you had Pete Cross's art. I'm loving that. So buyer beware, you know, I guess if you're into the horror thing, this is going to be right up your alley. But, you know, there's going to be a Crisis in Archie Horror Universe eventually. Maybe they'll pick up the remains from Archie meets Predator or Sharknado or whatever.
Ooh, Sharknado.
Yeah, well, I'll never forgive those sharks for chewing Sabrina's arms off. Oh, well. Corey, bring us up. What's your last one?
All right, the last one is Wonder Woman 58 through 60. And the reason I picked this up is because it's not a relaunch, but it's a new creative team. It's G. Willow Wilson and Carrie Nord, although other artists are filling in already. But it starts with you don't need to know anything about what's going on with Wonder Woman before you pick it up. You got a Terry Dodson cover. I like Terry Dodson when he draws women. Oh, yeah. But what it is, we are introduced to the fact that Ares has been imprisoned. He escapes and has decided to turn over a new leaf. And of course, Wonder Woman, who has fought Ares in every iteration of the series, does not quite trust him. But he is going to try and make the Earth a better place. He wants to be a better god. And issues go through what he does for that. And because, you know, it's a comic book and he's a bad guy, how it falls apart. I was used to the painted coloring Carrie Nord had on Conan. I had not seen his regular colored art before. So while I like this art, it did not blow me away the way Conan did. But the story actually blew me away because it was the first time I've read a Wonder Woman comic that touches on the Greek mythology that doesn't make me roll my eyes and go, oh my God, just make it stop, unless it's by George Perez. Wonder Woman is not a character that I intrinsically like. I find her to be kind of dull. Sorry. And her Golden Age and Silver Age stories are just fucking unreadable. I did like when Roy Thomas was on the book with Gene Colan. I thought they did a good job. I love the George Perez stuff. I like the Greg Rucka stuff. Everything else I could take or leave. But G. Willow Wilson has made Wonder Woman interesting. I don't know if this is a supporting cast that was there before, but she's using classic members of the supporting cast, but giving them new personalities and making them far more interesting. Etta Candy is much, much more than Wonder Woman's fat friend.
And of course, her name was Candy.
Yes, that's, you know, that was kind of the joke, you know. Oh, she's Wonder Woman's tubby friend who eats candy all the time. That's why her name's Etta.
Etta Candy. Yeah.
But it got me excited about what's coming. It made Ares a more interesting villain because normally, even under George Perez, I'm the god of war, therefore I show up and bad things happen. This made Ares more interesting, and it reminded me a lot of when they made Loki more three-dimensional in the 2000s over at Marvel, to where Loki was just, well, I'm the god of lies, so I lie all the time, and I'm always trying to take over Asgard. What else do you do? That's it! But they've made Ares more interesting, which I never thought anybody could do. And if you've not tried Wonder Woman, pick it up let me see what issue she started on. Pick it up with issue 58 because it's a great first time reader's jumping on point. And just excellent art through and through. You know, I miss the, like I said, I miss the painted color that gave Carrie Nord's art much more weight. But this is still excellent comic storytelling without being, you know, somebody took a rapidograph pen and tried to see how many hash marks it could make on the page. Just really nice stuff. Joe, your last book? Joe?
I started. I did my last book.
Oh, so we're done.
We are.
You know who's not done?
Who's that?
Well, me, because I'm doing all these other podcasts. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network has all sorts of podcasts. We've got Scrabbling Across the West with Dave Cafell and his lovely bride, Stephanie. They travel across the country playing musical gigs, and at night they sit down to play Scrabble and talk about their day at scrabbling.solitairerose.com. There's Novelcast over at novels.solitairerose.com, where I take the novels that I've written and turn them into audio podcasts. Currently, we are doing a novel called Do the Job, which is a murder mystery set in the world of 1980s professional wrestling. Then over at badadvice.solitairerose.com, me, Corey Strode, and Wolfie B. Bad, along with Dan Moore, give bad advice to people who send in questions. That's bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is growing. Be there! You think NBC will get mad I used that? And if I'm doing all these podcasts, Lord knows we got to get paid, because we're getting tons of downloads, Joe.
Good.
We have over 2,000 listeners.
Thank
2,000 listeners. And none of you people will make
it. Corey, sit down. Take the red pill. What I want to say to you 2,000 listeners.
We don't do the red pill thing.
I want to tell the listeners, thank you. And more importantly, spread the word. Put us, when a new episode appears, drop us on your Facebook feed. Let your friends know you enjoy the podcast. Let them know what you like about it. If you got anything you want to send us, we're always open for feedback. But believe me, we appreciate that you do listen to us, whether it's right away. There are thousands and thousands of podcasts. And the fact that you found us is a minor miracle we don't take for granted. And, you know, just spread the word however you can. One of the things I like to do is when I send out the eBay winnings is I put a little blurb that Corey and I used to use as con flyers and just let people know that, hey, you know, we're here. And as long as you keep downloading and listening, we'll keep doing it.
And we'll
probably keep doing it anyways.
But and the thing to let people know, we are a national treasure.
Well, I don't know. After your shameful confession that you keep saying you were at the Spam Museum in Austin, Minnesota 3 times and you only went twice. It's like I don't even know you.
Well, you know why I said that, right?
Well, you don't need spam anyway, so.
No. The National Enquirer was going to blackmail me. I decided to get out in front of it. One thing I want to say. You know, we don't talk politics on the show because it pisses some people off. But the story about how the National Enquirer has decided to go after Jeff Bezos as a favor to our president. I just want to remind everybody, you know, working at the National Enquirer who are listening, you really don't want to piss off somebody with $800 billion.
No, not really.
You know who, and you know who else you don't want to piss off?
People at Spam.
These guys, our sponsors.
The Solitaire Rose Podcast Network has ads. And our ads are, first, for the best web host in the whole known universe, go to DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host in the whole known universe. And we have been using it since 1999. So we're old. But also, if you need a web host, just head on over and use the code KRAYZ and get $20 off your first year. And when you're at work or you're at home, do you really want to eat those unhealthy snacks? Another bag of chips from the vending machine? No, you want to go over to Graze.com and get healthy snacks sent to you automatically with a subscription, or you can order whatever snacks you like. Just go to Graze.com. Your first and fifth box are free if you use the code CORYS3R5B. That's CORYS3R5B. Free snacks, healthy snacks, and the best way to keep away from the vending machine. If you would like to advertise on Crazy Comics and Stories or any of the other podcasts, you can just send an email to solitarerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. Thanks.
Well, I was close.
You don't want to piss them off because they're wonderful, wonderful people.
The question I have is, have you been to the new revamp Spam Museum?
I have not been since the
road trip. It's free, by the way, if you're ever through Austin, Minnesota. So check it out.
And they've got a great gift shop.
Yes.
And now we get to Joe's favorite part of the show, where we regale him with stories of spam pizza. No. It's Joe. What's going on the eBays?
Well, I've been selling stuff. And it's
really?
Funny.
Is that funny. What eBay's for?
It is. And it's free for buying. And I'll talk about that a little bit later when we get to geeking. But, you know, I just kind of look at some of the things that just sold. Funny, we were talking about Loki a minute ago because, as you know, Tom Hiddleston is confirmed, as far as I can tell, that there's going to be a Loki TV show.
Yes.
And it's I didn't catch the where. It's not Netflix.
Disney Plus.
Okay, so that's part of the Disney series coming
up. It's the Disney. There's going to be that, a Scarlet Witch and the Vision series. Those are the two that they have announced on Disney Plus.
Cool.
So we're going to have at least one more.
And I'm already. They should do a Hawkeye one. Really, that would be brilliant.
Rumor is they're going to do a Sif series.
I've already said Disney, just hurry up and take my money. It's funny because the same time that announcement hit, my collection of Loki Agent of Asgard 1 through 17 sold.
Asgard. Asgard.
Now, the interesting thing about this is the number one is a big issue because that's kind of the first time we see Loki as close to Tom Hiddleston as we will see. And it sounds like it'll be a lot closer. And of course, the rumors are going, how is he going to be? Blah, blah, blah. Well, maybe look at this series if you have it, and it might give you an idea. It led up to Secret Wars and ended. And I read it, I'm slowly getting rid of my collection. So I just put it up. It sold right away. A couple other fun things that sold. I talked about this in the past. 1988 had Marvel Treats, which is kind of a head off to the Halloween things that you can get through your previous catalogs. It was just a 16 mini comic set, and I bought mine at Kmart. It's got the little had the little tags on them for $1, and it had Spider-Man, Care Bear, Captain Marvel, and Heathcliff. Because if you remember back then, Star Comic was still an imprint. And the idea being you open it up and you gave them away as Christmas gifts, which is a brilliant idea. You know, when Halloween comes around or two, 3 months before, pick up a previews catalog and look in it. And they'll have all the Halloween, I think they call it Halloween Fest comics. And ones you can buy to give away and also ones you can buy as, get 25 of them and give them away instead of candy. Because, it promotes comics. It rots minds instead of teeth. It's just good all around. So I had these for some reason. I must have given them away at the comic shop. Well, 88? No, I probably gave them away at home. And I had not only a sealed set, but I also had some loose ones. So for people that wanted to read it. And why did I do that? Because nobody else on eBay did. And it worked. You know me, I'm all about flipping comics. Remember when I was talking about the Laurel and Hardy comic from DC 1972?
Yes.
Sold it. This is something that I've always had a problem with. And I guess it's not really a problem because, I sold it for a little more than I paid for it. But it's like I see something and I fixate on it. And I'd never seen this comic before at the con I went to. And I heard about it. I picked it up. I researched it. I shared it on the podcast with everybody so you know how much fun it was. And sold it. That's just the way I am. Also sold a copy of Showcase 100, which was kind of fun because it had most everyone who ever appeared in Showcase 1 through 99 in it. This is just, it's not quite Silver Age because it was 1978, Bronze Age, but this is just DC, not really wackiness, but just fun to pick up. They're not terribly expensive. I mean, a fine copy sold for $15, and you could probably find one for less. I sold Guardians 3000, 1 through 8, which, again, were the original Guardians of the Galaxy who came back in time. And since you had Guardians of the Galaxy, they had to rename themselves Guardians 3000, and they were doing a series. It didn't matter. Secret Wars interrupted it, 1 through 8. So it's out of here. And the last interesting set I sold, it's something that I learned more about sex, drugs in it than anything I learned in school or any books that my mom gave. I'm talking, of course, about the Fabulous Furry Freak Brothers. I bought these in the 80s when I was buying comics. God bless my mom for letting me keep them. I mean, someday when I sell off my Cherry Pop-Tart collection, I'll explain to you how I was able to keep that as opposed to her just ripping them up in my face. But Mom, it's a collectible. The Fabulous Furry Freak Brothers it was a set 0 through 13, which I believe is the whole run. And the 0, of course, was Rip Off Press number 1. And it's real interesting to figure out when you have these, which ones are first printings and which ones aren't. Because when I looked them up, I had to use our good buddies at AtomicAvenue.com. And they basically say, okay, the 16th print has a $1.50 cover price. First prints usually had a 50-cent cover price. The 18th print had a $2.95 print. Because Rip Off Press just kept these going. Every time a new printing came out, the price went up. So you can tell the difference between the printings. So it's like the first Fabulous Furry Freak Brothers I bought was a 16th print. The number 2 was a 9th. The number 3 was a 6th. Third prints for 4 and 5s. And then 6 through 13 were all first prints. And I think, if I recall right, that 13 issue came out. I think it came out while I had the comic store in the 90s. And after that, there really hasn't been anything new. Somewhere in my vast accumulation, I do have a compilation of all this stuff. And I do want to pick up the compilation that has the Fat Freddy Katz stories, because that was not included. I mean, it was included in the Fabulous Furry Freak Brothers comics, but the cat had his own comic book as well. So this was a tough one for me to get rid of because, like I said, I have a lot of memories of it. It's a fun series, just crazy. And I'm not kidding. I learned more about drugs. I learned more about sex from reading these stories than anything they taught me in school, anything that my mom taught me. And, you know, I don't know how they hold up now. I mean, eventually I will dig up my collection and read it and probably talk about it here. And, you know, runs of this are rare. They're hard to find. Mine sold for about, I had it up at 200. I didn't sell it for 200 because, you know me, I'm all about being the lowest price on eBay and I'm all about best offers. So if you see something you're interested in as you're wandering through my eBays, just go to Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z. If you tell me you're a listener of this here podcast, I will probably take your lowball offer in consideration. Believe me, the cheap guys are out there. I mean, when I'm listing a $200 comic and you give me a $10 best offer, I'm like, well, you know, if you're a listener of this show, I may take it. You know, especially if you finally paid a quarter for it. You never know. So check it out. And I'll talk about some of the stuff I've bought. Because, you know, I'm not just a huckster. I'm a eBay fan as well.
You're a fanboy.
I am.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not where I take a whole bunch of red pills just to discover that they're not even M&Ms, they're just Skittles. Yuck.
Okay, yeah, good. At least they're not Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
I don't mind Reese's Peanut
Butter
Cups.
Yeah, those are pretty. Or Oompa Loompas. Remember those? Half chocolate, half peanut butter?
Yeah. You know what I do to annoy people at work now, though? Hmm. I do mix in some Skittles with my M&Ms.
Good man.
I leave them out, and I put in, like, you know, about a handful of Skittles. And you can always tell when somebody gets one because they go, oh, man.
Yeah, because you're thinking, oh, a nice mouthful of chocolate now. What the hell is that? Oh, Skittle.
No, it's freaking and geeking. Joe, what you freaking on?
Ben Affleck's out. I am mightily disappointed with you, Warner Brothers. Not that they give a rat's ass. I liked Ben Affleck as Batman. I feel they didn't really give him a chance to do much. Zack Snyder, I'm looking at you. I guess I understand why they want a younger Batman. They kind of box themselves in a corner with this. But, you know, I watched the Aquaman movie while I think that was before I got the knife cut up. Or was that after? I don't remember.
It would have been after because it came out right before Christmas.
Okay, so it was after. Did you get to see Aquaman at all?
No, I didn't.
Okay, no, it's, you know, there's plenty of things I've never seen. I enjoyed Aquaman. After I did that, I got one of my cheap DVDs I got for Christmas, opened it up and watched Justice League. And yeah, you can tell where Zack Snyder had his influence and where Josh Whedon went in and put his influence. And I actually enjoyed Justice League. You know, then again, I also enjoyed Batman Forever, but that could have been because I was drunk and sitting next to Nick Post. I'm just saddened that they never got a chance to let Ben do Batman. I guess I understand why. I mean, Ben is gone on. You know, they said he had troubles. I don't know what they were. Don't care. And already they're starting the rumors about, well, they were thinking of this guy. Oh, no, this guy's terrible, terrible. Oh, what's it called? No, this guy's terrible, terrible. People, STFU. I've been through this with Michael Keaton, who's largely regarded as one of the best Batmans ever. And believe me, nothing you're going to say is going to make a difference. Wait till he's acting. I don't want to see bright light pictures of his costume. I don't want to see you bitching about him. I don't want to see you, you know, oh, we got a 2-minute promo. He sucks. No, I want to wait and see the movie and then decide.
And so, then say it sucks.
Yeah. If you've seen it, that's fine. And believe me, I've run across a lot of things. And Corey, you've ranted about where people just, it sucks. No, you say, I think it sucks. I didn't like it is a better way of putting it. You know, it's not here to like, but you know, just a blanket statement. It sucks. Sorry. You're not the king of all being. The next one, speaking of rants, I'm just going to read this rant and then we'll discuss it. The ranter goes, I decided this weekend that I was in need of some Star Trek, as I am enjoying the Discovery series so much. I asked a friend about which of the recent non-Discovery novels to read, and they sent me a flowchart of the order in which to read the novels from the past 10 years or so. I mean no disrespect, but seeing things like that make me want to go and read a crime or detective novel. Anything I don't need to worry about what to read before or after. Now, the only problem with this person's rant is this person, I know, knows pre-Crisis DC. I know, understood every freaking nuance of Final Crisis. I know, can follow complex continuities and has the ability to line up things in proper order. And more importantly, is these particular Star Trek books in question, not only have I ranted about in previous podcasts years ago, but also are probably going for 25 cents on the eBays even as we speak. Yet this person doesn't want to bother reading the novels from the past 10 years or so, even though I've got them sitting in my basement and he can borrow them anytime he wants to get his candy cast Rudy Poo butt over here. But I don't want to name any names because, you know, I mean, I'm just not that type of guy, am I, Corey? Corey?
Joe, did you look at the flowchart that I sent you?
Dude, I was reading the freaking flowchart.
That flowchart, because somebody sent it to me. It's like, oh, here's the order in which to read them. And my eyes just started glazing over because it's, you know, read this book and then these three and then over here. I counted up and it's like over 70 books.
It is.
Yeah, let me put it this way. I have not read the Wheel of Time series. You know what the Wheel of Time series is, Joe?
No.
It's this ultra best-selling fantasy book series that runs for 14 books. And back when you had the small shop, Brian Wilson was talking about, oh, you know, I'm reading this series. It's called The Wheel of Time. It's by Robert Jordan. I said, oh, the guy who wrote all those shitty Conan novels? Yeah, but this is really good.
These are more shittier well, novels. Said,
you know, this is the fifth novel. They run about 1,000 pages each. And this is the thing that kind of made my head spin. And he's just now getting to the plot. And all I could think is, I would have to read 4,500 pages for the story to start to come together. Meanwhile, I could pick up a Mickey Spillane novel, get an entire story, beginning, middle, and end in 200 pages.
But see, that's the thing with the Star Trek, is you can do that as well. Granted, there are bits of it that are book one, book two, book three.
Yeah.
But for the most part, and, you know, you don't have to. And here's something that I find disingenuous is that for me, when I was reading this, I would have loved to have a flowchart like this, even though it was, because I was like, okay, is this a new book? I don't recognize the cover. Okay, copyright 2016. Oh, wait a minute, go back. Okay, I read this one. This is 2015. Okay, this is the next one. Gotta pick it up. Rinse, lather, repeat every freaking month.
That's the thing. When I picked up one of them, nowhere did it say, these are the books that came before, and at the end, this is the next book.
Well, then that was probably a standalone.
Because it was the first part of the Destiny trilogy.
Then you don't need to read anything. It's just the first part.
Here's the thing, Joe. I'm reading the first. I dove in starting with Destiny, and then next is the Typhon Pact and all this. So I'm reading the first one. And one of the things that, you know, people have said is, oh, you know, they fill you in on the previous books. I felt like according to that chart, I haven't missed that much. I felt like I'd missed all kinds of things. Beverly Crusher and Picard are married.
See, this is, again,
there's this and there's that. See, and
this is how I know Corey never listens to what I talk about on the podcast, because this was something I talked about years ago. They're standalone books, except for the series, and they're doing what Star Wars did. No, we're not coming back to these characters ever. Famous last words. And they just ran with it. So, again, where you're jumping in, I guess I didn't see that. Because a lot of times when they would get to, this happened there. Oh, okay. That's all you need to know. You don't need to know how, why. If you do, go back and pick up the issue.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You know, and again, if you do decide to read them in order, the payoff is a lot bigger. Just like, again, you've been reading DC Comics, Marvel Comics forever. How do you get somebody to jump in on 70 years worth of continuity and get them not go, wait a minute, I don't get what's going on. I'm just going
to
abandon the whole thing.
That's
you
what's
got a freaking flow chart. I never
That's
had
the thing,
a flow chart.
That's the thing, Joe. Every so often people go, well, the X-Men used to be the number one selling book. Why is it, you know, now in the, you know, the biggest selling one is like number 50? Because you have to have read the X-Men for 20 years. I'm just saying, I liked the Star Trek books in the 80s and 90s, where it was like, you know, you'd pick up a Next Generation book or a Voyager book or one of the books, beginning, middle, end. You didn't need to read any of the rest. But Joe,
boring.
How many people have the time to invest in an interconnected book thing?
Marvel, DC, are you listening?
Right. I understand that too. But here's the other thing. When the Picard series starts, all these books are going to get wiped away.
We have no idea.
Yeah, we do.
No, we don't.
Because they've said so.
I didn't see that. So. The last thing I saw before we get too snarky is that they weren't sure what they were going to keep. Were they just going to say, because they have 30 years of no story. Are they just going to come back and say, here, are we going to keep this, throw this out, whatever? Or are they going to do like Disney did with Star Wars? And apparently they're going to do that. Just everything's out there, throw it away. We're going to start over. Which is probably better for them to do.
And the Star Trek books have famously, I mean, the Star Trek movies and TV shows famously have ignored the books.
Yeah. But you don't have to. If you really want to give a damn, you know, you're starting near the end of the whole pocket book series. So you're like, okay, I'm going to jump in on X-Men or Fantastic Four 50. Wow, this doesn't make any sense. Who's this guy in purple? you know, if you really care, I can show you where to start. Because I just jumped in and started going. And even to this day, when I pick up a book and read it, they're always like, oh, this referred to this event in this previous book. Just move on. Or if I care, go back and pick it up. Or sometimes I'll go to myself like, geez, did they ever cover what happened with those parasitic things from the second to last episode of the first series of Deep Space or Next Generation? Yes, they did. In this book's here. So I'll tell you what, I got right here something that's easy for you. I'll call it Star Trek Primer. It's Star Trek Deep Space Nine Trials and Tribulations. It's a novel by Dana Carvey that's based on a teleplay by Ronald D. Moore and Renee Echevarria, based on a story by Ira Stevens Beer and Hans Beamer and Robert Hewitt Wolf from the Troubles with Tribbles television episode written by David Gerrold.
I've read that.
No, the only reason to read it is because it has a very cool introduction by David Gerrold about his involvement with that that awesome episode of Deep Space Nine Trials and Tribulation. Matter of fact, that's probably the only reason to read it.
Well, yeah, it's a novelization of a TV episode. And
they do actually throw some stuff in there. I mean, there's a couple neat things, like when Odo recognizes Kirk as him and Spock come in, and he's like, I better perhaps just act like drinking because I don't want to. He's a starship captain, and he's probably used to noticing things out of the ordinary. I don't want to be out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
So just, you know, just a fun little thing they did. And it was a quick read. I picked it up mostly because I'd heard that David had done an introduction on him being on the set of Trials and Tribulations. So that alone was worth the like $1.50 I paid on eBay for it. So anyways, I'm not going to mention who made the rant, so no worries. Speaking of weather, told you we'd get back to it. My garage door is frozen to the freaking pavement. Corey talked about, you know, it was raining. Everything was wet. We had a little holes, so some of the rain got into the garage. And what's making it so nefarious is it rained and then flash froze. So nothing got a chance to evaporate, dry up, or melt. It just froze into ice. Chris come home one day and said, garage door is not opening. I'm like, oh, geez, what the hell is going on? Last time it happened, the chain slipped. And so I had to loosen it. I was able to lift the door. I lowered it. Reran the garage door, connected it, clicked it in place, and it lifted. This time I went out and I noticed, okay, try to lift and then go back. Try to lift and go back. So, okay, loosen the garage door off the chain because it's on a spring. So even though the thing weighs like 300 pounds, it should lift. Did not lift. And then I realized it's frozen to the ground. Fortunately, our cars are out of the garage, so we're not screwed that way. And you know, we were talking about the weather. It's not going to get above freezing in the near future. So Chris and I are trying to decide, are we just going to live without parking our car in the garage? Hers. My truck is outside. Or are we just going to go buy a heater and heat the garage, which has its own problems because, you know, yeah, fine, we can leave it run up. And then the garage fills with carbon monoxide. We can't get in it to open the freaking door anyway. So it's a conundrum I'm not quite sure what to do with. I don't want to force it because then I won't have a garage door. I'll have a piece of a garage and no way to close it. I'm back at work. A little miffed because for some reason, once again, I was the only supervisor on duty, and I'm not even a real supervisor. I'm just a lead. What pisses me off is that, you know, it's kind of like all the other soups are either they don't work those days, so they don't care, or they're on vacation, or they don't care, or they're working somewhere else and they don't care. And it just drives me crazy. I mean, I've been back to work. It's been going okay. I mean, by the end of the day, I get achy. My hip's not 100%. And yeah, you know, Corey, you heard the story that made the news about the TSA officer that committed suicide down in Orlando.
Yes.
I was talking about a friend of mine who passed away earlier. He committed suicide. Did not know that. Apparently. You know, again, I was at home out of the loop. I found out that he had died because someone sent me a note that no longer with TSA, but knew the guy, asked, did you know this if he died? And he sent out a couple instant messages and they said, yes, he passed away. The next day they knew he had committed suicide. I was out of the loop, did not know. At the funeral, the parents were up front and admitted it. Again, I couldn't make it to the funeral because of my hip. So I'm sitting at work reading these emails, and I read the email that talks about him committing suicide, and I felt like someone sucker punched me right through the guts. I mean, I was literally bawling at my computer, and the supervisor that was with me, you know, the return to duty, she told me just take a pause. I went in and I talked to the FSD, who's like the TSA boss at my airport, which was interesting because I'd never been in his office before. And I was talking with him, and he had said he had just gotten a letter from this guy's parents. His name is Joe, and they were thanking him because Joe suffered on the autistic scale. I will say suffered because he was teased all his life. He was bullied. But when he got to TSA, something worked because he'd been there as long as I had. He was in my original class way back when we were all sitting in a classroom worried that the next attack was coming tomorrow and we had to work as hard as we could to get in place. He was able to work within the structure of TSA and keep his job for 16 years and thrive and make friends. I mean, I connected with him not only in jokes. We talked history. We talked comic books. I saw him at our comic cons, the MCBA. He always, when he could, he would go. If he couldn't, you know, he always, always told me, sorry, I couldn't make it. You know, I actually bought a few graphic novels from him before I disappeared because he knew why he bought a bunch he wasn't interested in. I said, yeah, I'll pick these up from you. No big deal. So it was sad to hear that he committed suicide. So, and, you know, part of me wanted to scream because, you know, it's like, yeah, this poor TSO down in Florida. I don't know. I mean, I know his name. I've seen his pictures. I've heard from people that work with him. I don't know why he did it. I don't know what demons were possessing my friend Joel. But everybody's thinking of him in a positive light because he was able to thrive. He had friends. I count it a high point that I was able to make him laugh. Had a very, very dry sense of humor that he didn't share with everybody, but I was able to make him laugh. Not at the dad jokes that I made Corey suffer under. But, the freaking is that we're coming up, and as of this, where are we here? We'll know by the next, well, in two podcasts from now, we'll know if they're going to shut the government down again. Unlike last time, I'm not ready for it. Last time I had money saved up because I was doing for my hip and all that. It'll be interesting, though, because a lot of people stepped forward to help not only TSA, but other government workers that were out. Salvation Army set up, Target donated gift cards. I pray to God it doesn't happen because there are just some people that just can't cope. And, you know, Corey will attest, if you got a friend you're worried about, you haven't talked to, just reach out. Say hi. Let them know you're thinking about them. Life's too freaking short to do otherwise. I mean, I think I threw you off base, Corey, when it was super, super cold out a couple of weeks ago. And I actually reached out and said, are you doing okay?
There were a few people who did that. And it's like, nobody's done that. It's like, is there something going on I don't know about?
Well, we had heard about your National Enquirer spam thing. And no, I think we're just worried, you know, because, you know, you're alone. And if something happened, we would be the last to know. So by hearing you're okay. And, you know, I reached out to my brother, my sister. I reached out to my kids. I even did it with Holly today because holy smacker bitch was traffic sucking today. I don't know how your ride to work was, Corey.
Long.
Oh, well, I went to work. I left at 10, just like I did during the snow day. And I was like driving down the street. I got four-wheel drive on and I'm going sideways. Oh my God. And then I look behind me and the car is less than a car length behind. I tap my brakes and he realizes because he hit the same clear ice that I did. And he backed off a little and the guy behind him backed off a little. The roads just suck because although it's bright sunny shine, it's below zero. The salt and ice they throw on the road doesn't work. I had to go out to my doctor to get a doctor's note for work. And, I just took it slow. I was going 45, which is legal minimum on a freeway, and people are going faster than me. And I said, let them. As I look in the rearview mirror, which I'm wont to do, I'm always interested in what's going on behind me, because there's been plenty of times when the asshole behind me is on a phone or on a did not see what was going on. And if I hadn't been paying attention, I would have as soon as he hit me. Well, this person was about an eighth of a mile back and out of the blue was spinning down the highway. And I just, a part of the highway I just drove over, did not hit anything, did not hit the retainer wall, did not hit any cars. Fortunately for them, the semi trucks behind them were also an eighth of a mile behind. So they slowed down. This person was able to right themselves and go. Got the doctor's note, headed to work. On the way, and I'm on the freeway, which is usually the better roads in Minnesota. I see on a road that I've just been on, there's two cars in the ditch with state patrol and tow trucks nearby on the same road I just traveled on. And then I see a car impaled in the we got these sound barriers. I don't know if they're common in other areas of the country, but they build these big, massive wooden walls so that the neighbors don't have to listen to sound. And on the other side, they get to stare at a big, massive wooden wall. Well, this guy hit the left meridian, spun across the little exit island through the off ramp onto the fence, and was sitting in his car just waiting to be towed. After that, I got off the road and just took the side streets, which I got to move slower at, but I felt more in control because, you know, I could drive just slow enough to see what was in front of me, and I made it to work safely. On the way home, it was a little bit better, but I always was watching out for that ice slick. And, you know, again, Corey, you were in, you drive rush hour traffic. I usually don't. So I don't know. How was your commute to work and back today?
All week it's been very slow.
Which works sometimes because then you don't have people getting into stupid accidents.
But I have been at the group home every night this week. And if I ever get to talk, we'll talk about that. But
Never. My podcast. I'm taking over in 2019. Go ahead.
There were people passing me.
I'm done with my freaking. You keep going.
There were people passing me, and there was one guy. You know, I'm going about 35 because it's back roads to get to the group home. I'm going 35, and this guy's, you know, riding my ass. And, you know, got his brights on, and eventually he passed me. And, you know, I'm still just, you know, my little indicator saying that the roads are slick. I listen to my car. Half mile up the road, there he is in the ditch facing
Serendipity, baby!
You just, damn, you gotta take care. My freaking, first off, I'll do the comic related ones. Joe, do you remember how irritated I got when DC canceled the Impulse omnibus?
Yes.
They have canceled the Batgirl of Burnside omnibus, which really makes me irritated, and the Absolute Dark Knight, because they were going to reprint the Absolute Dark Knight. They've canceled that, and isn't there a penalty for soliciting stuff and then canceling it?
Well, technically, no. We have a problem with it because when we buy through Discount Comic Book Service, we pay for the books that month.
Yeah.
But in reality, you're not really – that's the terms we deal with discount. It has nothing to do with previews.
No, I thought if DC solicits a book and then cancels it due to low sales, they have to pay some sort of fee. Because I know smaller publishers who have canceled books – I won't name any names, but I know of one small publisher who pretty much went out of business because he kept missing his deadlines. And, you know, he would solicit a book and then he'd miss the deadline. The book wouldn't come out and Diamond would come back and go, dude, that cost you.
That might be something between Diamond and the publisher.
Yeah.
But I'm not, you know, again, it's not something that would necessarily affect a retailer. Although it's got to suck for you because you're putting that money out and then I'll say, oh, yeah, fine, you're giving me credit. But, you know, I could have done something else with that, like buy some pizza or something.
I bought another book.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But for especially me, the thing is, it's making me trust DC less because they're canceling more and more stuff after they've solicited.
But Dan's running around the country and maybe he'll stop by in this podcast. Dan, if you're out there, stop by. We'd love to talk to you.
So I'm freaking about that. I'm freaking about the fact that my comics are going to be even later because Discount Comic Book Service, they delivered their previews to the wrong place. So they don't have previews to send out to people.
Wait,
so,
that doesn't make sense. I got my previews.
They sent a letter saying that if you're weekly or every 2 weeks, they didn't get enough previews, so they sent out the people who were monthly.
Ha ha!
So that was kind of irritating.
Well, yeah, big time, because next week's episode's supposed to be our previews. So
yeah, I'm going to have to go to a comic shop and pick one up. And the last thing I'm freaking on, Joe?
Yeah?
Gather round. Sit okay. under the learning tree.
Hang on, let me. It's hard. I can barely sit with my hip and he's making. Okay, I sat.
It is time for hanging at the home.
Oh!
So remember a few weeks ago when I said, oh, you know, we're going down. They're moving four more people into the new cottages and they're going to cut my hours a bit. And that's okay. I'll get some time. They have added back every single shift. Every single shift and more.
So you're buying the pie the next time we're together.
I'm not going to have to. You'll see when I'm done with this story. Okay. They also kind of arm-twisted me into coming in early. So that's one of the reasons we haven't been able to record, because I'm getting home at like 7:30. I have to turn around and be there at 9. And with the road so bad, I'm leaving. You know, normally it takes me about 15, 20 minutes to get there. I'm leaving 45 minutes early. So this week I'm really stressed. And at the full-time job, I'm the person who works with certain clients. And we've been waiting for information on one that's starting soon. And they pushed it back and pushed it back and pushed it back. And I wasn't able to work Monday because I had a migraine and wasn't able to see. So I had to take medication and everything. But when I come in Tuesday, they're like, oh, by the way, you're doing a training on Tuesday. We finally got the information for this client and it starts next Monday. And we've been losing temps right and left because our competitors. Jobs. Good for them, but horrible for us. So our work volume has increased. And then they go, oh, you need to write up a full knowledge base and a training deck for all these people. And it needs to be ready by Wednesday so we can proof it and you can present it on Thursday between your other work. So I'm really, really stressed. So last night, you know, I was able to get it all done, got it in before the deadline. I get to the group home last night, and usually when I come in at 9 o'clock with the clients we have now, most of them are in bed. You come in, you do a little cleaning, you give a couple meds, you kind of sit down and relax till 10 o'clock when I can lay down and get some sleep. Well, at about 9:20, I hear one of the clients say, help, I need help, and the other staff goes and looks. I thought, oh, you know, it's, you know, probably something small. They need help getting, you know, they need help getting into their wheelchair or something. And the staff, who's got a really, really thick accent, says, Cody, Cody. I come and look. The client has a huge gash over their eyebrow, blood pouring down their face. And it's like, I fell. Okay, I'm going to clean him up. You call the on-call, because we have to report any injury. So I, you know, stop the bleeding, clean her up, do the first aid stuff, and, well, somebody's going to have to take her to the ER, because anytime one of the clients has a fall, we go to the ER. Now, I'm the sleep staff, Joe.
Doesn't sound like you're getting much sleep.
This is the point where they tell me that the awake overnight staff wasn't going to make it in till midnight. And can you take her to the ER? This, by the time we're ready to go, it's 9:45. So I have to drive to the ER. The wind out here is blowing so hard that there are whiteout conditions. And the whole time this client, you know, I'm not hurt. I don't want to have to go to the hospital. I won't stay in the hospital. You can't make me stay in the hospital. Can you please be quiet so I can concentrate on the driving? So we get there, and it's an urgent care. And I don't know why they call it an urgent care. That seems to be a misnomer, because it took an hour and a half for the doctor to come into the room to look her over. That's right, Joe. 11:30. Doctor says, okay, you know, does all the tests and everything. It's just a, you know, just a cut. We're going to put stitches on it. You'll be out of here. You'll go home. We got out of there around 1 in the morning. And I am so tired by this point that all I can think is, oh, she's got to get stitches, huh? Wonder who she was snitching on, because we know snitches get stitches. But I can't say it. But the whole time there, you know, she wouldn't take her coat off. She didn't want the TV on. She wouldn't lay down. Because I'm not staying in the hospital. And she's, you know, irritated and annoyed because there's nothing to do. She's just sitting and waiting, but she won't turn the TV on and all that. So, and her story changes a lot. So every time when someone comes in, how she got hurt changes to the point when the doctor comes in, it's nowhere close to reality. Well, I was outside doing my exercise, and I saw a bunny, and I reached down to grab the bunny, and I fell and hit my head on and the doctor's just looking at me, and I, you know, point him toward the sheet that shows the symptoms, and one of them is, you know, that Alzheimer's and other issues. So he says, oh, well, what happened? Well, she was going to the bathroom, and her slipper got caught in her pajama top, and she fell into the door. I don't get back till 1:30 in the morning, and I have to write everything up. So, Joe, I went to work today. Weather was the roads were still bad, even though the weather was fine. I left work at 6, got home at 6:30, took a shower, got in the car, because I knew my phone said, hey, traffic is really shitty today. Can you believe it? And was in my car from 7 o'clock until 8:30 to go 17 miles.
You can't see, but I'm just shaking my head in sympathy.
I'm tired. So, Joe, as we hit the 2-hour mark, 2-hour and 10 mark in this recording, and I have to leave for work in about 15 minutes, what are you geeking on?
Well, good luck waking him. Corey's on the sleep shift. Good luck waking him up.
Waking me up tonight unless somebody's dying.
I actually listened to another podcast.
I listen to podcasts all the time.
I know. And this one was Clear and Vivid with Alan Alda, who is one of my favorite actors of all times. He has one, and you can go check it out. What drew me to it is that he had all the actors that are together in a MASH reunion. This would be Mike Farrell, Loretta Swit, Jamie Farr, and Gary Berghoff, because everybody else sadly has passed away. And it was so much fun just listening to them reminisce. These are people who just genuinely love each other. They talk about how one of the big things was is that they did not retreat to their dressing rooms in between takes. They basically sat in chairs and joked and ran each other's lines. And, you know, Loretta Swit talks about how she came upon Wayne Rogers and Alan Alda running lines, and she listened and she said, guys, do you realize you just recorded that scene? Oh, yeah, yeah. And they went back to doing it again. And Loretta Swit again, she was talking about how her and Larry Linville would get together and just think of all these goofy little things that her and Frank could do together. And then, of course, they bring it up to, I believe it was Larry Gebhardt, who was producer.
He was the showrunner, head writer, and directed a lot of episodes.
So they'd run it past him, and a lot of times you say, go with it. I mean, they were allowed a certain amount of improv, not because they necessarily wanted them to, but because the cast got such a they were trusted with it, because they had run so many times to him. He fancied, guys, just do it, and if I don't like it, we'll stop and do it over. And it was a fun time to listen to it. Alan, it's free. You go to Clear Plus Vivid with Alan Alda. Look for it on Facebook. It'll link right to the podcast. And I sat down as I was doing other things. And there were times I had to stop and rewind because I would start getting into something. And then I realized I hadn't been listening to what they were talking about. And so that was fun. I found something in the store that made me giggle. Corey, you remember the 08 Tesla Roadster that was launched into the sun? Or I should say the first car that
yes,
was ever...
was lost, launched into space, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And they made a little Hot Wheel of it.
Oh, neat!
So I found this, and I was laughing. It says, Hot Wheels Tesla, greetings from space. And it's got the famous picture of the guy floating above the Earth. And I had to buy that. You know, I'm a sucker for Hot Wheels anyways. It's not really worth anything. It was just kind of funny. I mentioned something about eBaying because I'm not only do I like eBay, but I also I think I might have complained about this earlier because of the shutdown and the furlough. Not only was I getting stir crazy because I wasn't able to go out and like buy things, but the weather has been just so horrendous that. I mean, I probably could have gotten around anywhere I wanted to go. I have four-wheel drive. I got my truck. I drive safe. But you just, who the hell wants to go out? So I turned to my eBays, and I've been going on kind of an essential spree because a lot of the essentials I want are like crazy money. Like, where did I put my list here? Oh, just right in front of me. Underneath, Avengers 8 and 9 are like $50, $60. Dude, I can get an essentials for that. And plus, they're the later ones. It'd be nice to have, but not killer. And there's a few other ones that are close to cover price, but there are a lot that are not and that are actually cheap. And by cheap, I mean cover price or below. So I've kind of gone on an essential binge. Some of these I mentioned before, like I picked up the Essential Supervillain Team Up, which I wasn't quite sure.
I love that book.
Yeah,
it's such a mess.
It is.
How many different creative teams did they go? It's one of those 70s book where it's like, okay, well, the creative team changes every month.
Yeah. And and this was one too that I don't recall if I picked up the hardcover that reprinted everything. You know, I'd sold DC's version of it a couple weeks ago, but I'm trying to get the essentials together. They look cool on the shelf. I picked up the Essential Luke Cage Power Man Volume 1.
Sweet Christmas. That's
never read
the greatest panel in comics history.
Oh, I finished out my...
Where Luke Cage says to Dr. Doom, where's my money, honey?
Yeah. Oh, God, that's in there?
Yes. Oh.
So I got that.
He takes a job from Dr. Doom, and Dr. Doom stiffs him. So he gets in a plane and flies to Latveria to get his money from Dr. Doom. That's just, I love that so much. Where's my money, honey?
You don't see that on Netflix.
No, you don't.
For some reason, I had number two. I never had the first one. And of course, I do have the Power Man Iron Fist one. So I picked up the Essential Iron Man Volume 5, which is the last one in the run that I needed. I picked up Marvel Essential Captain America Volume 7, which I, again, filled in the gap. And this one I went a little higher on. I wasn't sure if I wanted it, but it's only a one-shot, and I read what's in it. Essential Submariner Volume 1, which had, I believe, was it Tales to Astonish, Iron Man Submariner, and then Submariner 1 in it.
Yeah.
And again, I don't know. I have no idea if any of these are essentials. Don't really care. I want them to read, which is ironic because I have a membership to Marvel's Unlimited. But I just want them to read. For some reason, I got this idea in my mind that everything before Spider-Man 178, the holy grail that started me on this road, if I can just have it in my collection, I'll be fine. Somehow to read when I want. So I did pick up. Corey, I forget, was it end of December? You showed me that cheapgraphicnovels.com.
Yes, cheapgraphicnovels.com.
I picked up Essential Wolverine 4 through 7. Guy on eBay had 1 through 3 for $25, and I'm like, that's cheaper than cover. I got my Wolverine run filled. And I'll probably read it later and in some future podcast, say, why did I bother? I did pick up the Essential Marvel 2-in-1 Presents The Thing Volume 3, which I guess, as you hear, I got my clicky pen, and I will cross off my list. So I've still got, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, there's 20 I don't have. I don't count the Conan one because if I get that, it's going to be in an omnibus. Marvel Saga, I'm kind of like, do I want it? Do I not? And some of them, like I said, the Avengers and some of the later X-Men ones are just so ungodly expensive. I could buy an Essential or an omnibus or the Epic Collection for less, and I might just do that if I care to. So, anyways, if you got some you're selling, just drop me a note because you know. You buy from me, I buy from you. Corey, would you like to win a comic book shop?
No.
Don't answer that. I already know the question. www.chimerascomic.com/win-comic-com Hi, blah, 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 store. Whatever. Google it. There's a person, and he owns a comic book store in Oak Lawn, Illinois.
Which is a suburb of Chicago.
Yes, in case you wonder if it's southern. And apparently it's Chimera's Comic. And he owns a couple other ones. He just decided he wants to give this one away. So if you go there, he's going to give it away either on the 28th of February, which as this podcast drops is in a couple weeks, or he gets 2,000 applications. The application being... you tell him why you want to run a comic book store. And he's giving it away. I believe there's some other rules, like there may be some, like $100 or something, because legally, I found this out when I tried to give...
It's $25.
Oh, that's what it is. Thank you. I found this out when I tried to give Butch my car, that the government really frowns when you do that, just giving people stuff. And so you just, yeah, he bought the car for me for $100. Oh, okay. Take a sales tax. It's yours. So for $25, that'll help cover whatever legal paperwork that's going to be done. But seriously, if you want to own it, go for it. Damn it. Let us know. We'll pimp you up. You can be our official comic book shop of this here podcast if you win the local comic shop giveaway. And like I said, you can go find it. It's all on the eBays. You know, I got so many geeking to talk about, but Corey, your plea has touched my heart. What are you geeking on?
Joe?
Cut me short.
Have you ever heard of the Marvel character Pussycat?
I don't. I'm thinking of a independent book called Pussycat, where issue 4 came with... I don't remember. It was like bagged and boarded or something.
But Joe, I don't
know the Marvel one.
Do you want to see the curvy cutie from Score versus the foul fiends of lust? I want you to join me in a cool and cuddly capers of a friendly secret agent, namely Pussycat. The lady is a swinger. This was a black and white magazine that Marvel did in 1968. The cover's by Bill Everett. The interiors are probably Bill Ray. It does not say it's a Marvel. It says it's a Marvel magazine on the interior, but nowhere on the outside. The editorial director was Chip Goodman, who's Martin Goodman's son, who was put in charge of Marvel and was fired immediately once the contract was up with Candace Industries and they didn't have to have him. Nobody from Marvel other than Bill Everett was involved in this book. It is a black and white magazine. Only one issue came out. However, you can subscribe to it. 35 cents a copy, 40 cents in Canada. Subscription rate is $4.50 for 12 issues. It was going to be monthly.
What was it called?
Pussycat. And what it is...
P-U-S-S-Y or just Y?
P-U-S-S-Y-C-A-T.
All right.
What it is, they are reprints of kind of strips about a quite busty woman and humorous spy adventures from the Atlas Men's Sweat magazines. So it's like it reads like a Martin.
Oh my! $457.
Well, the copy I got was only $20.
Yeah, there's somebody selling one for $20. So.
But if you read, this was reprinted from Mail Publishing Corporation. This was from Atlas Magazines. This one was from Zenith Publishing. This one was from, you know, so it's a typical Martin Goodman. Yeah, we've got all these shell corporations. I picked this up. It's so 60s. But I like the Marvel black and white magazines, and I'd heard about this one for years and years and years. I picked it up. Am I going to recommend it to anybody? Oh, fuck no.
But if you see it in a dollar bin somewhere.
This is terrible. But I'm glad I have it. It's fun to read. She loses her clothes and has her hands covering or towel covering her quite a lot. And I mean quite a lot.
Sounds kind of like Adam. Who does Dark Horse, Brainlock, Impala.
Yeah,
that's
very
kind
much
of
like that, except it's drawn very 60s.
Ah.
And, you know, a lot of, like, here's the story. Pussycat, the mirthful misadventures of a naughty, nonsensical nymphette. I love this.
Is that original or is that a reprint?
It's a reprint of stuff from the Men's Sweat magazines.
Okay, because I see that there's somebody, like I said, has got one listed on eBay from 68. That's
they
the guy
might have
who's got
printed
it, for,
it more than once.
Yeah, and then there's somebody who's got the auction for $20, and
yeah,
it'll be done by the time we get around, you know, this podcast drops. But
I did not have a lot of time over the week to read much of anything, but I am reading one of the Star Trek novels. In that chart that I sent you, they've got a little, they use a Star Trek symbol for, this is a good place to start. So I am reading the first of the Destiny trilogy, and it's written really well, but boy, does it really feel like fanfic, man. Boy, does it feel like fan fiction. Although there's one very cool idea that I had for a Star Trek story years and years ago. One of the ships gets hit by Romulans, blows out the warp drive and the communications. And they are 16 light years from the nearest planet that may have communication. So they're stuck with the, you know, light speed communication. They don't have subspace communication. So they're literally stranded. And what they have to do is go close to light speed, which means it's going to take them, you know, a little more than 16 years to get there. But because they're going so close to light speed, it'll only be a few months for them. And I always thought it would be a cool idea in Star Trek if it's okay, they've lost communication. They don't have warp speed, and they're tons of light years from a star base or a planet that's part of the Federation. How do you get yourself out of that? So that's the thing I like in this novel. I really don't like all the fanficky stuff like, oh, Beverly Crusher and Picard are married, and they're such a loving couple, and they sit next to each other on the bridge holding hands. It's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, again, like I said, this is, you know, you're starting, am I? You're starting in on chapter 45 of a series. There is so much that happened.
Starting on chapter 45 of a 500 chapters.
Well, no, there's so much that happened before that makes what's happening now
more
poignant. And if you would have talked to me, I'd have said, no. Don't, that's the, in my opinion, that's the climax of the whole book run. Everything else after that is just, oh, that's kind of neat.
Well, so, listen, after this story is the Typhon Pact.
That's the end of it. You know, okay. Again, you're saying, okay, here's the DC Universe. I want you to read Final Crisis.
Okay.
You know, so, but anyways, you're into it.
The chart lied to me.
Well, yeah, I don't buy that that's the first one, because there's other, and I don't want to say it, but I'm going to, there's other Borg stuff that happens up to that that leads the Borg to say, okay, you know what? F you, Federation, We are here to destroy you. But that's neither here nor there.
Comic-wise, basically everything that I read and enjoyed, I talked about in the reviews. Wonder Woman. There was only one book that I read that I enjoyed that I didn't review, and that's Champions Number One. They started a new Champions Number One, and I read Champions Number One and Two, and do not let anybody spoil it for you, because there is a huge bombshell twist in Number Two, and all I could think is, oh, I don't know how they're getting out of that. I don't know how they're getting out of that. But I like the idea of the champions being, these are Marvel's young superheroes. Because there's always been, in my mind, there always needs to be a team of teenage superheroes. When I started reading the X-Men, they were, you know, a team of teenage superheroes. New Teen Titans, same thing. I like that dynamic. Because first off, it's newer characters. There's ways for them to bounce off each other. And because they're teenagers, their emotions are way over the top anyway. You add superheroes to it. It's just much more fun. I think one of the problems I had with the X-Men was when they were all in their 30s. Now they're back in their 20s, by the way. Because the Marvel Universe has only been around for 13 years.
Thank you, Doom. Does anybody think Doom? No, they just cripple his face again. Let him go.
Well, believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about funny books. Oh, we're at an hour and a half. I'm going to have to edit this one down. You've listened to us blather on about funny books for however long it takes.
Yeah, good for you. Thank you.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
Misery of Flight has given us another MP3 to share with you folks. As you recall, they're putting together their album. They actually gave us a song a while back, and they dropped another one. I'm not even sure what it is. I think it's an acoustical. Am I saying that right?
Acoustical?
Acoustical? Acoustical?
Now you've got me saying it wrong.
No voice. Acapella. No, that's no acoustics. Anyways, they dropped something. Go to Misery of Flight on the Facebook page. Check it out. It's my nephew, too. So, you know, he's kicking ass. This is your chance to be on the ground floor, because if he keeps at it, he's going to go somewhere. Corey, hit my music.
Oh!
As I stare into the day's reflection, I see the choices that brought me here. In my silence, I am fading to the words that I never said. Grips my throat and it pulls me under. And now I stare into an abyss of doubt, searching madly for my last mistakes. Like embers burning the night, the stars never match our light. Though all things fade away with time, and as the ashes fade to gray, I'll never turn and walk away, though all things fade away with Don't look back. Turn away.